The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us this morning as certified financial planner Jim Saulnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Good morning. On today's show, we are going to take live calls. We are live in studio today to take your calls at 970-353-1310. We also have quite a batch of emailed Social Security questions this week to go over. So as we're waiting for your calls, we'll be taking a crack at some of those Social Security questions, hopefully help some people out. My name is Chris Stein, as you heard in the intro. Glad to have you with us this morning. I'm here with Jim Saulnier, also a certified financial planner and breakfast eater.
Good morning.
All at the same time. I apologize in advance. I'm getting over a little bit of a cold, so my voice might sound a little bit different.
But you too.
Yeah, I think it's going around. A lot of people. My family is down. So
Andrew brought it. I told you, the Belgian bug.
That's got to be what it is.
Yes.
It's already circulated around my
house. I'm finally
getting
over it.
So welcome to today's show. We, like I said, today's a live show, so please give us a call at 970-353-1310 with any of your questions about Social Security, IRAs, rollovers. We just got done with tax season, so sometimes this generates some questions about taxable events with your retirement accounts, your IRAs, your 401ks, etc. We've been dealing... this seems to be the season for Social Security questions, so that's probably going to be the hot topic today.
We've got a lot of emails this past week.
We've gotten a lot for some reason. One, I assume, is that the looming deadline that is a mere 6 days away now, the April 29th deadline, that affects some people's ability to utilize a specific Social Security claiming strategy. The window will close on that ability here on the 29th. I have noticed that there's a lot of people freaked out about this particular deadline when it doesn't even apply to them in any way. So there's a lot of confusion about exactly what's going away and what people might want to rush out and
do before the 29th. Before we get to the email questions, let's talk about what's going away, because we had callers to the office this week, emailers, thinking everything from – spousal benefits themselves are going away, to everyone thinking, God, I have to file and suspend before the 29th. They don't know why. They've just heard it's going away, so they want to do it.
Yeah, I think there's just been – there's been enough press about this to at least get people to pick up little snippets of it here and there. But very few, I think, understand exactly what it is. So,
before you get into it, I just want to say and reiterate to all our listeners, both here in Northern Colorado and our iTunian listeners, spousal benefits is not going away. That's probably the biggest misnomer. What is going away, and Chris will explain it, is a claiming strategy that spouses used to take advantage of. And it worked perfect for spouses who were around the same age. That's what's going away. Spousal benefits themselves are not. But why don't you explain what's going away?
Okay. So, well, let me start by describing an ability people have had when claiming Social Security. And that would be once you reach your full retirement age, which for people reaching that point at the, you know, in this year would be age 66, that will slowly increase to age 67 for people that are born between 1954 and 1960. But if you were born before 1954, your full retirement age is 66. So we're dealing, you know, a lot of people right now are, that are contemplating claiming Social Security would fall into that category. Once you reached your full retirement age, and even now, even and past the 29th of April, you have the ability to suspend your benefits. So if you had claimed at any age, say at 62 or 64 or thinking about claiming right now, if you even immediately or some point thereafter decide you would like to suspend your benefits, kind of put them on pause or on hold, you're allowed to do that. You have been allowed to do that. You will continue to be allowed to do that. What's going away was the ability for spouses in particular to continue to claim a spousal benefit on your record while your benefits were suspended. So that created this opportunity for instance, one person to file, and you might wonder why would they go and file and then suspend if they don't need it right now or don't want it, just don't file. Well, the act of filing for Social Security retirement benefits unlocks the door for spousal benefits to be claimed by your spouse. So the typical strategy was for the one person in the couple to claim and suspend, file and suspend once they reach their full retirement age, with the goal of letting their own benefit grow to age 70 where it reaches its maximum monthly amount. But by filing and suspending, the filing part is what unlocks the door. Their spouse could begin collecting spousal benefits even though the main, you know, the worker that originally claimed but is now suspended isn't receiving any benefits for the 4 years between 66 and 70. So it was kind of a way to have one spouse collecting something while the other spouse is still waiting to age 70. And the spouse may even have their own retirement benefit that in the background remains unclaimed and thus growing to age 70 as well. Well, the change that's been put into place that gets really enacted, the vote on this, the law was changed back in November of 2015. The deadline was made the end of April here. So April 30th is the deadline. So if we're telling everybody, and the assumption is you have to have this completed by April 29th. After that date, if someone suspends, which they still have the right to do, all auxiliary benefits underneath their record, which would include spousal benefits or minor child benefits, and technically if your parents are dependent upon you and are dependent, they would even be eligible for a benefit. All of those, what they call auxiliary benefits, will shut off if you suspend your benefits. That's the change. As long as you have filed and suspended prior to the end of April here, you will maintain the ability for auxiliary benefits to still be paid if you are suspended. But if you haven't enacted this suspension by the end of April, you no longer are grandfathered in to this. So that's what's changed. So anybody who's under age 66 by the end of April, this doesn't affect you. Because you have to be your full retirement age in order to suspend. So if you haven't reached 66 by the end of April, you can ignore this change. There's nothing you can do about it. You've lost the ability in the future to suspend and still allow your spouse to collect. Nothing you can do. If you're 66 or older and have not yet claimed and you're married, because this is really a case where if you have a spouse, this would be the technique to consider, you should assess quickly within the next week if you have some type of advantage in doing this file and suspend strategy, opening the door to spousal benefits. You may not. Not everyone benefits from that technique. It's not like everyone did this. Not every couple did this. Not every couple was this their optimal claiming strategy. But for those who it turns out it is their best claiming strategy, they must enact the strategy before the end of April. So that's, I know that was a lot of words in a summary, but there's just a few things going on, and hopefully that cleared things up for people who weren't quite, they were aware of a deadline, but weren't quite sure exactly what was going to change.
Right. So spousal benefits, folks, are not going away, and neither is the ability to suspend benefits. You can still suspend your benefit. That's not going away either. What is going away is that once you suspend your benefits, anyone receiving an auxiliary benefit under your earnings will essentially also be suspended. And prior to the change, they were not suspended. So people might be thinking, Chris, why would they still want to suspend benefits? There's really only one reason now after April 29th why a person would want to consider suspending their benefits. Let's just say you retired at 62 and began claiming Social Security, mm-hmm. or 63 or 64, it doesn't really matter. But you started claiming your Social Security early. What do we mean by that? Well, the government really wants you to claim your benefits at what is known as your full retirement age, which again, as Chris alluded to, for most people listening is age 66. For Chris and I, since we were born after 1960, it is age 67. And for people born between, is it 54 or 55?
It's 55. It's that five-year period from 55 okay. to 60.
So people born from 55 to 60, they every year have their full retirement age extended by 2 months. So some of you listeners might know your full retirement age, and it might be 66 and 8 months or 66 and 6 months. That's how they came up with that. Anyways, as long as you – if you filed early in the eyes of the government, that's anybody who filed for benefits before their full retirement age. They say that's filing early. And they're going to reduce the amount of money they pay you. They're just going to give you less. At your full retirement age, though, is where you get not your full benefit. You get your – well, they do call it their full benefit. They call it the full retirement benefit. Chris and I have said before in the past it may be your full benefit, but it's not your largest benefit. Your largest benefit is age 70. And what they do is every year past your full retirement age that you do not claim a benefit, they'll increase your future benefit by 8%. It's a simple compounding, not compound compounding. So it is for those of you who have a full retirement age of 66 – you have 4 years before reaching age 70. You get 8% simple more interest more per year, not interest but additional growth. Benefit. Mm-hmm. So that's about 32% more Social Security if you wait from 66 to 70. So back to my example. You retired at 63 and you claimed early. You're getting a lot less Social Security. Not only that, you're not going to get the 8% growth in Social Security from 66 to 70. But the government does let you, at your full retirement age, suspend your benefit. That has not gone away after April 29th. So you go to Social Security and you suspend your benefit at age 66. Why would you do that? Let's say longevity is in your family and you realize, my goodness, I made a mistake claiming at 63. I'm leaving, and probably if you claimed at 63, you probably are going to get 60, 65% less Social Security than if you had waited to 70. It's a huge difference. So what you can do, if longevity is in your family and you realize, goodness, I'd rather have more Social Security in my 70s, 80s, and 90s than right now. At your full retirement age, you can go to Social Security and say, suspend my benefits. And they will. They'll stop paying you. And for every year you suspend your benefits between 66 and 70, they'll give you 8% more Social Security when you turn it back on.
And you don't have to suspend in full year increments. You can. They're going to actually calculate the growth at 8%. They're going to give you those credits on a monthly basis, but it's easier for us to talk about it with that just a simple 8% quote. But a lot of people misconstrue that to mean I have to delay for 1 year increments at a time. No, you don't. You know, however many months that you have suspended, they will figure out the monthly increase and apply that once you turn your benefits back on.
Right. And the way this strategy would work, and we've opined on this before, we have said repeatedly, we like Social Security. We may not like the government and all it does all the time. It's growing kind of big. I don't know if you noticed that lately. But
it's a little big. Social Security program by itself is pretty big.
Exactly. Yeah. But Social Security, dollar for dollar, pays more in benefits than any private annuity you can buy on your own. There's only three ways to get guaranteed lifetime income. This is income that is going to continue for the rest of your life no matter what. You work for a company that offers a pension, and if you're already in your 60s and you never worked for a company that offers a pension, you pretty much missed that boat. You have Social Security, or you buy an income annuity, a single premium immediate annuity. And that is where you go to an insurance company and you say, I want you to pay me money for the rest of my life, no matter how long I live. And the insurance company will. You can buy those annuities. And if you live long enough and get all your money back, the insurance company has to keep paying you. You're buying longevity protection. However, the best longevity protection, dollar for dollar, is Social Security. Well, actually, I'd say PERA first. PERA in Colorado pays a lot of money, more than Social Security, dollar for dollar.
Well, some of that, I will say a little bit of the shine has been taken off that because of their cap now on cost of living adjustments.
True.
They've got a 2.5% cap. So if inflation starts to – we haven't had that problem in the last – roughly decade now, but if inflation takes hold and we see inflation levels in the 4, 5, 6 category for a while, Social Security as it's structured right now will keep pace with that, where something like PERA would fall behind.
Correct.
Because of the cap now on the cost of living adjustments. And we're seeing those kinds of caps on other – PERA is our Colorado governmental-based defined benefit plan. But other states and cities around the country have started to institute changes to become more, I guess, fiscally conservative or to shore up their finances.
Right. So that's a good point. PERA does cap their cost of living adjustment, but that has not been an issue over the past 8 to 10 years because CPI, inflation, has been below that.
And in particular, the reason currently that Social Security has an advantage, say, over insurance annuities is that in a low interest environment, the annuity payments are reduced. Whereas Social Security, their payment structure does not take into consideration current interest rates at all.
No, that's based on your salary.
It's based on your salary. It doesn't have anything to do with current interest rates. So in a low interest environment, the payout from Social Security compared to other similar payouts becomes very attractive. In a high interest environment, then the annuity may very well have an advantage.
Right.
But as we speak right now, and as it's been for quite some time in this low interest rate environment, Social Security, dollar for dollar, is actually a pretty good longevity annuity.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. So let's say again you claimed at 63, mm-hmm. and let's just use a round number, Chris, you're getting $2,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Just round number.
Yeah.
Very easy.
Which would be pretty high if you
for someone who claimed at 63. I agree. But the math works out.
Just to keep the numbers easy.
So you're making $2,000 a month.
Yep.
You're now 66 and you realize, I need more.
Mm-hmm.
I need more guaranteed income, especially in my 70s, 80s, and 90s. you've done an analysis, perhaps you hired us and we showed you, you're going to need more money.
Or you've realized there's some tax benefits.
Yes, because Social Security, that's the other advantage to Social Security, it's tax advantaged.
Right. So there's a variety of reasons why you might want to essentially change your mind on having claimed early.
Correct. So you have two options to create more income. You could buy an income annuity, take some of your savings, give it to an insurance company, and they'll give you some money. Or, in what I'm describing, you can suspend your Social Security at age 66. And that money that you were going to use to buy an income annuity, you instead use to make up the Social Security you've suspended.
To live off of while you're suspended.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And over the course of 4 years, Chris has his handy-dandy calculator here. So if you were getting $2,000 a month for 48 months, mm-hmm. how much money did you leave on the table?
That would be $96,000.
I was say, you don't have to turn that
say,
on. That was easy.
Yeah.
That's an easy one.
I thought you were going to give me a challenge here.
No. So $96,000 is what you would use to live on. So let's just round it to 100 grand total. So you could, at 66, take 100 grand and buy an income annuity with it, or take that same 100 grand and live off of it. And instead, what will happen when your Social Security turns on again, your $2,000 benefit is now $2,640.
Right.
You got 8% more per year. So for $100,000, you bought $640 a month, which is how much a year, of guaranteed lifetime income, about $7,000 or $8,000?
Yeah, that I can be prepared for. Sorry. He didn't prep me with the types of questions he was going to ask. Yeah, $7,680 a year.
Okay. So for $100,000, you essentially bought $7,680 of inflation-adjusted lifetime payments.
Right, and that's key.
That's the key. Social Security goes up for inflation. That same $100,000 for a 70-year-old to buy an inflation-adjusted annuity would probably purchase half.
Right. I was going to say about $4,000 probably at
or
age
less.
70.
I don't have
the inflation-adjusted numbers.
I don't have the website mm-hmm. open in front of me that we use to get a quote. So you see, people, you can get so much more than if you bought it on your own, and the key is the inflation adjustment.
Right. And that's what that was exactly what I was getting at when I said in a low-interest environment, Social Security has an advantage over these private insurance annuities. The payout, again, for an inflation-adjusted annuity at age 70, 4%, you know.
Max. It's probably going to be in the
threes. I'm giving the benefit of the doubt, but, you know, say 4% on $100,000, that's clearly $4,000 a year. Well, you, in effect, by living off of the $100,000 for the 4 years and then receiving the larger Social Security benefit, you, in effect, bought an annuity from Social Security.
You bought a $7,800 annuity.
You got about 7.7% payout instead of 4.
Inflation adjusted.
And it's inflation adjusted as, you know,
as the 4 would be.
But, you know, who would rather have 4% when you could get 7.7?
Right.
So that's what I mean. Now, again, if interest rates were a very different story right now, we might be describing something else. But the key here is these are the types of things you need to look at when making these decisions. There's not – sometimes people form an opinion about something, or they hear about, you know, Joe Smith who did this, that, or the other thing 10 years ago, and they somehow get in their mind that, oh, Social Security is this bad deal. It's much better to go off and do something else. That's not always the case. And
the person given that advice is a money manager who happens to get paid for managing money.
Or selling annuities.
Or selling annuities.
Yeah.
And we do. We do both in the office. Yeah. We get paid to manage money and we get paid to sell annuities. Mm-hmm. But this is the first strategy we always consider. Mm-hmm. If you remember, we had a woman, a radio show listener in the local area. We had her pay back a survivor benefit that she claimed early to turn on the survivor mm-hmm. benefit later. At her full retirement age, rather. So we had her pay it back to turn it on later because we showed her you're going to end up with tremendously more income than I can put you in an annuity.
Mm-hmm.
And I get paid to put people in annuities. And I said, no, don't pay me to put you in an annuity. Shut off and pay back your Social Security and turn it back on and live off of the money you were going to use to buy an income annuity.
And that's the type of recommendation you will get from a fiduciary. Just to kind of spin this off into a related topic, a fiduciary is someone you have a relationship with that is required to put your interests ahead of their own, to make recommendations in your best interest. In this case, the woman we were talking about, her best approach was this technique of paying back the Social Security benefits she had claimed early, which that's a whole nother topic, being able to do that. But for she was able to do this and then instead benefit from the larger Social Security benefit rather than be sold a financial product, aka an annuity. If a person who is not a fiduciary is making recommendations, they're allowed legally to tell her you should buy an annuity. Because the annuity would solve her problem.
We see that all the time.
It's not like they sold her something that was completely inappropriate. It just wasn't the best option. That's the key here. This fiduciary standard that the Department of Labor is now expanding to cover more financial advisors than before, that fiduciary standard requires that someone make that recommendation. And that's very different from what how the financial industry has been for quite some time now. We'll see how this impacts and how many people, you know, uphold that or abide by that. But as a certified financial planner, you are expected to be held to the fiduciary standard. So I guess that's one thing that you hopefully will get if you're looking at advice from a certified financial planner. Although, admittedly, I know some certified financial planners that
I wouldn't trust.
That I wouldn't. I wouldn't trust to even know that the Social Security is an option.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's not like maybe they're intentionally not recommending it. They just don't know
and
enough.
And that's one thing I want to say. Just because someone is quote unquote, I talked about this after the DOL rule. You cannot legislate morality. And I
or I guess you could legislate education, but they don't.
But they don't. This whole DOL rule, since we kind of took a 180 here, again, and I said this when it first came out, people, don't lull yourself into thinking that just because they passed a rule which doesn't take effect fully until June of 2018, just because they passed a rule doesn't mean all of a sudden everyone's going to start acting in your best interest. Number one, you cannot legislate morality. And one of the biggest fiduciary advisors ever that was already regulated as a fiduciary, didn't have to change any rule for him, was Bernie Madoff. So he was an SEC registered investment advisor who had to act as a fiduciary, and he stole more money than anyone in history. So you cannot legislate morality. But more importantly, also what they did is pass a rule that said, hey, you've got to act in your client's best interest. But as I said, Bernie Madoff had to too, and he never did. They never passed any type of competency measures, minimum education standards, education requirements, ongoing education requirements in my industry. I've talked about this before. You have to go through more study and training to be a barber in the state of Colorado. Nothing against cosmetologists, nothing against barbers. They're good. If you had hair, you'd know it. Just kidding.
Funny.
But you need a good barber. There's nothing wrong with a good barber. But they have to go to more schooling than financial planners in the state of Colorado. Throughout the nation. I'm just not picking on Colorado. It is abhorrent. So don't think just because they passed this rule, as Chris alluded to, that all of a sudden you're going to be getting good advice. And the reason is there's a lot of – the financial planning is a big field. You've got wealth managers, you've got college planners, you've got debt management people, and you've got retirement planners like Chris and I. We know retirement planning, but I couldn't tell you diddly squat about college planning. It's not what we do. We do retirement planning. So we know annuities very well, and we know how they work, and we know how Social Security works. But just it's kind of like the law industry. You wouldn't go to a divorce attorney to create a will. You wouldn't go to Pete to argue – contract. Well, actually, you would. He is a contract attorney too. What doesn't Pete do?
He doesn't do criminal law.
He doesn't do criminal law. That's right. If you're arrested, you're not going to go to Peter Scott, the gentleman who comes on here and talks to us about estate planning. He'll get your ass in jail.
Except maybe to ask for bail money.
Yeah, Pete, can I borrow some money? Yeah. But you got to understand, you got to go to someone who knows what they're doing.
So we're actually approaching our first break here. I do want to remind people we are live in studio this morning. We kind of got off on a topic
tangent
here that kind of rolled downhill, picked up some speed there. But we are live taking phone calls. If you'd like to call in and ask your very own question, we'll
and
give
emails
you full attention. And you can also email us. So the way to contact us this morning, calling us 970-353-1310 or toll free 877-353-1310. Or you can email, if you're not comfortable calling in for some reason, you can email us live on the show here. The email address would be jim@jimhelps.com. That's jim@jimhelps.com. And he's got his handy-dandy iPad open right now to get those emails. Just make sure you give us your contact information so that you can be entered into the pie drawing. If you call in or email during a live show, you get entered into our monthly pie drawing for a Fat Albert's pie. And we had one previous live show this month, but only one entrant, I believe, from that show. Their name was kind of long. That was Ding Dong Daddy from Dumas. That's, I think, officially the longest name of a caller on the Retirement and IRA show. But after this short break, we're going to come back and we will hear, when we come back, one of the top songs from 1935. 1935 being the year that Social Security was created by the law, the Act, Social Security Act being signed by the president at that time. Who was the president then?
Roosevelt.
Roosevelt signed that. So I had a brain freeze there for a
second. Goodness, you're not very good in history, are you?
Well, I'm on Sudafed, so things are
that
a little
makes
foggy
your brain
this
dumb?
Morning. A little bit. So the song that when we come back was composed and performed by a duke. So thanks for joining us here on the Retirement and IRA Show. We'll be back after this short message. Back to the Retirement and IRA Show. That is one of the top songs from 1935, honoring the birth of... The song doesn't honor the birth of Social Security, but we honor the birth of Social Security by playing a fine song from 1935. That was, and is, In a Sentimental Mood by Duke Ellington. And this one has a good backstory I've heard before. Ellington actually composed this song in 1935 on the fly during a party in Durham, North Carolina. He's playing the piano at the party when he noticed one of his friends was having trouble with two women in attendance. I believe there were some arguments going on there. So Ellington tells the story that in order to pacify them, he placed the women on opposite sides of his piano and entertained them by composing this song right there live in front of them. So, and it turned out to be what we call a jazz standard, where it's lived to this day and jazz orchestras play it even in 2016.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And why do we do all this?
The show or the song?
The song.
Well, I said it's to honor the birth
and
of
then,
Social
but
Security.
But
ultimately,
songs,
in the fourth segment, we're going to take a look at or hear an update by somebody, probably me, on what's new on our blog, helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. And so we kind of tie that into this show. This is our more general show, the Retirement and IRA Show, where we talk about practically any kind of retirement topic. Here, then we also have a specialized or a niche blog that handles just Social Security questions and strategies and rules changes. We've been doing that a lot lately because of the rules changes from last year. But kind of to honor that, we look at 1935, the birth of Social Security. We look back 40 years in our next break. So the number one song in 1976, this week in 1976, to kind of connect to a way that Social Security ultimately calculates your Social Security benefits, in that there are what are called 40 elapsed years, which was what they believed would be a typical career span. And then we look back 35 years to 1981, because of those 40 elapsed years, they actually pick 35, your 35 best years, called 35 computational years. And those are the actual earnings years that go into your calculation for your average indexed monthly earnings, which leads them to the most important number in Social Security for you if you have a benefit that you've accumulated, and that is your primary insurance amount, your PIA, which happens to be your retirement benefit at your full retirement age.
Excellent.
So that's how we kind of try to make these strange connections between music and Social Security. So.
Interesting. Just want, for those of you who are new listeners, you might not know, you may not know how we came about doing this.
And if you're fairly new, I want to reiterate, if you call into the show, you get entered into a drawing for a fabulous, fabulous pie of your choosing from Fat Albert's, which is a fine restaurant here in Greeley, Colorado. Well known for their pies.
So right. Now, if you call from another state, it's going to be hard to get your Fat Albert's pie.
True.
But we would appreciate the call just the same.
But if you're going to make a road trip to Colorado,
true,
you could, when you're out here, pick up a fine pie.
Pick up a pie and some pot. Mm-hmm.
They don't do that there.
Do that with?
It's sandwich. Well, a Fat Albert's. It's,
oh,
it's
right.
Sandwiches and no pot.
Yes, I know. Sue is not sprinkling the pies with secret toppings.
Good thing. And right now, we only have one entrant for the month. So you have your odds of getting a pie right now are pretty good.
Pretty darn good.
And today is a really nice day in Colorado. And these days, I will say, people tend to be distracted out doing things. I have a lot of yard work facing me when I get home, so there's probably some people out doing yard work.
But we do want to encourage our listeners. That's why we go live twice a month. And we do it because, number one, we enjoy it. But number two, we hope our listeners can benefit from it by taking the opportunity to give us a call. So even though Chris and I have ample emails to talk about, I think you have two and I have three, so we have ample things we can talk about, we still would love a call. So if you can give us a call at 970-353-1310 or 877-353-1310 for those who want to pass the dime on to KFKA, please do. We're here for another hour and a half. We'd love to answer your questions and take some callers. Anybody who does call will be entered into a drawing for free pie, and we're going to be doing that drawing today because this is the last live show for the month of April, which has flown by as well.
It
has gone by fast. So we do want to do that. And I do have, as Chris said, my handy-dandy iPad. Last time we were live, you'll remember I did not have my iPad. But I do have my iPad. So for those who don't want to call but still want a question answered, you can email me at jim@jimhelps. That's jim@jimhelps.com, and we will read your email. We'll actually put you ahead of all the other people who emailed us earlier in the week. We'll jump your email right to the head of the queue and answer your email on the radio as well. So we do want to pass that on to everybody that we are here live. We do it. So play along and give us a call. I guess if we don't get calls anymore, we won't go live anymore. Should we threaten them?
That seems a little aggressive at this point.
Well, last time we got calls, do you remember what I had to do? Is a bet that I had to buy you and Devin a chicken sandwich if somebody called. And all of a sudden, the phone lines are lighting up. Everybody wanted me to have to buy you a chicken sandwich, which I did, by the way.
6 to 9 months later.
It took me a while, but I got to it.
Took a while for you to save up for the sandwich, apparently.
But you did get your chicken sandwich.
We eventually did get our chicken sandwiches.
Well, we're not going to make a bet that I will buy Chris a chicken sandwich if somebody calls the show, because then it's going to light up. But if somebody does want to call, we would greatly, greatly appreciate it. Okay, before we jump into more Social Security questions, because the majority of our questions were Social Security, I'm going to get into a non-Social Security question.
Oh.
Just to kind of
mix it up a little?
Mix it up a little bit.
Great.
Because your two are Social Security related, right?
They are.
Yes.
I do. There is one other topic we can discuss, by the way, if people want to call in. What is today? The 23rd? I'm now within 30 days of my 10-year wedding anniversary.
Oh, that's right.
And I'm still trying to figure out an appropriate way to celebrate such a thing with my wife, who I'm still married to.
I heard women like vacuums.
Really?
Yeah. Buy her a vacuum.
She could use it. She was talking about how the vacuum we have doesn't work really well on the wood floors.
I'm telling you, buy her a vacuum. You will win praise galore with her.
Well, that's one idea. So if anybody else has better ideas than that, 970-353-1310, maybe something that if you've been married longer than 10 years and something happened to you on your 10-year anniversary and you thought that was the greatest thing ever, I'd love to hear what that
now,
was.
Now, Melissa's not listening today, correct? She doesn't listen.
I don't think so. She doesn't normally listen.
She doesn't normally listen,
no.
Right.
And I think she's busy with kids stuff this morning, so that's why.
So if somebody calls with a voice and goes, "Yes, I'll buy her a diamond ring," it won't be her.
Well, hopefully, Adrian will do the caller ID on that and see if it's her. Because I wouldn't put it past her if she's listening.
Right, to change her voice.
Well, she has already dropped the hint.
Perhaps
about
a Mercedes
about the vacuum cleaner.
She dropped hints on a vacuum. I'm telling you, she wants a vacuum. I know these things. I know women.
I see. Okay. Well, I'll write that down. That's
why I've been a bachelor for 52 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, you had a lot of practice with many different women.
And they like vacuums.
That's awesome.
I'm telling you, I wouldn't steer you wrong.
Okay.
Buy a vacuum.
Well, I'll start a list here. Number one so far is vacuum.
Vacuum.
Got it.
Okay. Not just any vacuum. It's got to be like Dyson level or higher.
What?
It's got to be a good vacuum.
Well, I know, but it...
I bought a Miele recently.
I've heard those are good.
Those are really good, yeah. Mm. So you can get a Miele vacuum. Mm. I liked it.
Okay.
Works well.
Nice.
Very light, very powerful.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like good qualities in a vacuum cleaner.
It is. It's from Germany.
Does it suck?
Very much so.
Perfect.
And it's from Germany.
Hmm. Do they know how to suck really well over there?
No, they make very good things.
They do?
Germans, yeah. German engineering. You never heard of that?
Well, Volkswagen... I guess.
Well, except for Volkswagen.
I mean,
well,
Volkswagen.
No, they were excellent engineers. They tricked everybody.
Yeah.
So, but anyways, that's neither here nor there.
Yeah.
Are we ready to get into?
We are.
Because
so
the phone line's not lighting up with.
No. I just wanted to throw that out there. Was another
but you topic. Have plenty of time. They can get a hold of us next week if they have ideas.
Well, I know, but I don't want to wait till the last minute.
For this gift.
And it doesn't have to be a gift. Could be an experience of some kind or... Take her to do this or that or something. I don't know.
And is she going to equal great lengths to impress you on your 10th anniversary?
No. I'm sure not.
So this is just a guy thing. Guys have to do something.
That's my understanding after all these number of years, yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
That at least I've learned. There needs to be something. So.
She doesn't have to get you anything, but you must get her something.
Yes.
Wow.
That's clear. Yes.
That's a double standard.
Apparently. But it's one we have to live with.
Okay.
That's one of the burdens we bear. That along with a lower life expectancy.
All right. So I have a non-email. I have an email.
But before you get into that, we have a caller.
It's probably Melissa wanting more than a
Well, it could be. Disguising her name as Sue. This is Sue from Greeley. Good morning, Sue.
Hi. I normally come in as Georgette, but I have a suggestion.
Oh, excellent.
We have a friend in Idaho who bought his wife a tractor.
Oh, that's
a tractor.
A tractor. That's one up from the vacuum cleaner. So tractor. Although, literally last night, I just brought home from Lowe's our new lawn tractor. So I messed up. I should have waited a month.
You waited.
And I could have put a bow on that. And had it in the driveway, that would have been perfect. I didn't even think of that, Sue.
Oh, my second thing is that I am so thankful for you guys, and I just encourage it for people if they have questions to, of course, call in if they need to sit down with you. We were in California for 30 years, and a friend of ours started to get involved with a group, a very intelligent man, but we bought a very small annuity. Don't ask me what kind because we went through somebody else that we thought knew. We only had $2,500 that, like I said, a very small one. And it went down to $1,600 and we finally cashed it out at $1,800. So people need people like you to make the right choices.
Well, I thank you, Sue, for that. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay, have a great day.
Hey,
okay.
You too.
Oh, wait, before you go, are you still there?
I am.
What do you think of my idea, though, since he already has a tractor? Is a vacuum appropriate for his wife on a 10th anniversary?
For me, it would be great. You know, different people are different. Some, you know, I also love jewelry, so my family always knows.
But jewelry's not practical. You can't clean your bedroom floor with jewelry.
That your house, your housekeeper can bring her own vacuum.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
Okay. Well,
thanks a lot,
Sue. Enjoy the beautiful weather.
You too. Bye-bye.
Tractor is good.
Tractor, that is good.
But you
I literally just last night in the dark, I brought it home. It's sitting home waiting to be gassed up for the first time and mow the lawn today for the very first time.
Well, you blew that one.
I did blow that, but I couldn't wait a month to mow the lawn.
No.
It was getting, it'd be.
You're back to the meatly vacuum.
I know. But that was a great, yeah, I didn't think of that.
Okay.
Okay. Go ahead. Back to your non-Social Security question, which we have 5 minutes to answer.
Oh, goodness. Okay. So he wrote, "Hi, Jim. My wife, me and my wife's joint income is above the maximum limit for making Roth IRA contributions."
Mm. So must be above about $180,000.
$194,000 for a married couple.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's close.
My question is, can we still invest in a traditional IRA at $6,500 each? So I'm assuming they're over the age of 50. Mm-hmm. And then convert it into a Roth IRA. If so, is there any income limitation on this? How long do I have to keep the money in the traditional IRA before I can transfer it to a Roth IRA? And is there any special precautions I have to take? Thanks. And then I won't say who he is.
So he's asking about the what's referred to as the backdoor Roth contribution.
Conversion.
No, it's
contribution.
It's the backdoor contribution because you're not allowed to make a front door contribution because of the income limitation.
Yes.
So you, in effect, are making a contribution through the back door, but it's technically – you'll go on and explain this, I'm sure.
Right. Not in the 5 minutes we have.
Yeah.
Oh. I mean, I can't – there's a few moving parts to this question.
Well, pick one moving part you can do in – 3 minutes.
3 minutes. Okay. Well, the first thing is what Chris said. The government limits how much – they do limit how much you can put into a Roth, but they also limit who can contribute to a Roth. We love Roths. We love Social Security here, and we also love Roths. You'll hear me say that many, many times.
Not that Social Security couldn't be made better.
Oh, yes.
When we say we love it – it isn't because it's perfect.
Oh, no.
But we love the concept of it and the reliability of it and
yes.
What it does for people.
Correct. And we love Roth IRAs. We love Roth IRAs because they're extremely flexible. They're 100% tax-free. Tax-free is far better than tax-deferred. They don't have the required minimum distribution issues. They do not subject your Social Security to taxation. They will not push you into a higher Medicare premium bracket in retirement. There's just so many benefits of Roth IRAs. We can go on and on and on. Well, the government limits who can contribute to Roths based on earnings. And it's based on essentially adjusted gross income, or in this case, modified adjusted gross income. Essentially, your gross income less any money that you put into deductible retirement accounts, such as your 401k plan. If you are a married couple and earn more than $194,000 of modified adjusted gross income, you cannot contribute to a Roth IRA. And this listener falls into that category. So the government also used to limit who could convert an IRA into a Roth IRA. A conversion is where you take an existing IRA and turn it into a Roth IRA by paying taxes now. So you would pay taxes in your 40s, 50s, and convert it into a Roth, and then later in your 70s or 80s or 90s not pay taxes. Okay. In 2010, the government got rid of a rule they had. The original rule when Roths came out in 98 said people who earned more than $100,000, single or married, if you earned more than $100,000, you could not convert. They got rid of that and they said anybody, Bill Gates himself, Warren Buffett himself, could convert an IRA to a Roth IRA. We don't care. Well, what they in effect did is create a loophole that has since been termed the backdoor Roth IRA. It's not perfect, but when it works, it works. And when we come back from break, I will describe in greater detail what the backdoor Roth IRA is and how this listener may be able to benefit from it.
Nice use of time there, Jim.
You like that?
That's
huh?
perfect. Perfect. Yes, because we're running right up to our top of the hour break, where I believe we'll get to experience a little bit of news. But here on the Retirement and IRA Show, when we come back from this next break, we are going to hear the number one song this week in 1976. So that'd be 40 years ago today. And this hit from 1976, which we've actually heard for a few weeks now.
I wonder what it is.
Was ranked as the number three song of the entire year. So not only was it number one this week, but it was highly ranked for the whole year.
And it was sang by two, and it's number three.
Right. So this is the Retirement and IRA Show. Please give us a call, 970-353-1310. Over the break, we'll get to you right away when we come back. But we'll be back with you right after this short break. Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. Here on this beautiful morning in northern Colorado. That was the number one song 40 years ago this week in 1976 for the fourth week in a row. So we're getting to be real familiar with that song if you've been listening to the show lately. That is Disco Lady, performed by Johnny Taylor. This song's going to remain on the R&B charts for another 2 weeks. Oh, goodness. That's okay. What was that song a year or two ago that was on forever, and it might have been a John Lennon song or something. And it was on for like 8 weeks or some ridiculous amount. So we're coming towards the end. We're at least over the hump on Disco Lady. But as we lead up to our update in the fourth segment on what's new with helpwithmysocialsecurity.com, that is, in fact, the number one song from 40 years ago this week. So we're going to get back into, before we do that, reminder to everyone, maybe you just tuned in after this top of the hour break here. This is the Retirement and IRA Show, and we are live in studio this morning. So if you'd like to call with a question or a recommendation for me to buy a gift for my wife for our 10th anniversary, those are the topics of the day. Anything retirement related or Chris's personal life are up for grabs. But our phone number is 970-353-1310, or you can email us at jim@jimhelps.com. That's jim@jimhelps.com. And there's a toll-free number, too, if you happen to be out of the area, 877-353-1310. Or if you're local here in northern Colorado, 970-353-1310. Back to our email question, though. Jim,
yes.
As we left, was getting us up to speed on the backdoor Roth contribution involves...
Right. Let me explain a little more on that. And then we just got an email Social Security question in. We'll answer that.
We did? We just got one?
Just now.
Live?
Live.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. You're excited.
Yes.
There's someone out there.
There's someone out there. Well, Sue's out there, and she had a fine recommendation.
I'm surprised no one else has called. There's got to be more people who've been married for 10-plus years who could share with you wonderful things to do for Melissa. I mean, you have vacuum and tractor as two options. There's got to be others.
Maybe. I don't know. Those are pretty good options. Well, tractor's off the list because I already
Because you already bought one.
Already
you
bought a tractor.
Can you return it?
Well, she's seen it. So I could return it, but then when the exact same tractor shows up again, that probably won't fly.
Well, you blew that one.
Yeah, I know.
But
I'm
surprised.
Right
no
now
one
we're
is
on vacuum
sharing.
Cleaner. We're on hard floor vacuum cleaner.
It could be a rug vacuum cleaner as well. The Miele.
We have a good rug vacuum cleaner, but she wants one specifically for the hardwood floors.
Ah.
So.
Okay.
So go ahead.
Okay.
On our Roth deal.
So back to the back door. Mm-hmm. This gentleman makes too much money, cannot contribute to a Roth IRA directly.
Through the front door.
Through the front door. Because him and his wife have a modified adjusted gross income in excess of $194,000. So in order for them to get money into a Roth IRA, they were wondering about the backdoor strategy. The first thing to understand how the backdoor strategy works, it came about in 2010 when they passed – it was actually – it might have been 2005, not 2010, excuse me – when they passed a law allowing anybody – to be able to convert. I think it was 2010 because for the first 2 years in 2011 and 2012.
It was 2010.
Okay. So in 2010, 6 years ago, they passed a law that said anybody can convert an IRA into a Roth IRA. You don't have to be locked into the old rule, which was if you had a modified adjusted gross income in excess of $100,000, you could not convert.
And with our current budget deficit, I don't know why they wouldn't want to do that, because the act of converting from a pre-tax traditional IRA to a post-tax Roth IRA causes people to have a tax burden that they have to pay. And of course, the government, we all know right now, is running a deficit, so more taxes collected sooner than later they would prefer. So I totally understand why they open the door to let anyone do a conversion.
Right. Okay. So excuse me. When they passed that rule that said anybody can convert, what they essentially allowed people to do is take advantage of what is known as a non-deductible traditional IRA. Let me explain. A traditional IRA, before they came out with the Roth IRA, was always around. It was around since 1970. It was created during the ERISA Act of 73, created IRAs. And it allowed people to put money into them. They have gone through a few iterations and a few rule changes. But right now, the current rules are anybody can put money into an IRA and not deduct it on their taxes. But only certain people can put money into an IRA and deduct it. I'm not going to get into the rules on who can deduct it. Let's concentrate on the rule that says anybody can put money into an IRA and not deduct it. What does deduction mean? People sometimes get confused on that. Let's say you make $40,000 in a year, but you put $5,000 in a traditional IRA. And let's say you are eligible to deduct that. When you do your taxes, even though you made 40, because you put 5,000 in an IRA, you only pay taxes on $35,000, not the 40 you earned.
And then later, you will eventually pay taxes on that 5 when you take it out of the IRA.
And all its earnings.
Right.
So that's how a deductible IRA works. If you open a non-deductible IRA, and in my same example, you had $40,000 and you put $5,000 in an IRA, but you did not deduct it on your taxes, let's say you were not eligible to deduct it, and there's reasons why you may not be, you were not eligible to deduct it, you would have to pay taxes on the full $40,000. And then later when you go to take it out, you will not pay taxes on the $5,000 that comes out that you put in, but you will have to pay taxes on all the growth. So a lot of people don't like non-deductible IRAs because they're still going to have to pay taxes on the growth. So they're not a very common IRA. Why would you put money in and not get any tax benefit for putting it in and then have to pay income taxes on all the money when it comes out? When if you just invested that money, you would only have to pay capital gains taxes, which could be as low as zero if you did it right. So putting the money in an IRA doesn't really make sense if you're going to leave it as a non-deductible IRA. It's kind of silly. However, for what this gentleman wants to do, it could be a wonderful strategy. Because the strategy is he is eligible even though he earns too much to put money into a Roth IRA. He does not earn too much to put money in a non-deductible IRA. Anybody can put money in a non-deductible IRA. So him and his wife could put $6,500 each into their own IRAs and not deduct it. So in other words, it is after-tax money. So he put $6,500 in an IRA and doesn't deduct it. She put $6,500 in an IRA and doesn't deduct it. They now have $13,000 in an IRA. And since anybody can convert an IRA to a Roth IRA, they now take that IRA where they haven't deducted any of the money and they convert it to a Roth IRA. Well, when you convert, you have to pay taxes on any money you have yet to pay taxes on. Well, 100% of this money is after tax money. They've already paid taxes on it. So they can convert tax free. And boom, in a roundabout way, they put money in a non-deductible IRA, and then they turned around and converted it to a Roth IRA tax-free. Now, before I get into a whole host of caveats, he asked a few questions. One of his questions was, how long does he have to wait? I don't care how long he waits, and neither does Ed Slott. There are some people out there who think the step rule doctrine or whatever it's called, I apologize, it's not the exact word. CPAs listening know what I'm talking about. They think because of that, this strategy is not allowed. It is not. That doctrine does not apply here. And implicitly and explicitly, Congress and the president himself have acknowledged this works and it's okay. So I don't believe you need to wait. There are some advisors who say you should wait a month, you should wait a week, you should wait a year. I don't care. Neither – it doesn't. It doesn't matter. Now, if you want to be safe, Ed Slott says wait a month. I don't know. To me, you don't have to wait at all because nothing wrong is going on here. Anybody could put money into a non-deductible IRA. Anyone can convert. If Congress didn't want you to do this, they would have changed the rule. Anybody can do both those steps. Mm-hmm. Both those steps are perfectly legal. So I don't feel you have to wait at all. And in the president's new budget, he specifically addresses the backdoor Roth IRA and wants to remove it, says it's a loophole and wants to get rid of it. Well, as Ed Slott says, there's an implicit acknowledgement that it exists.
It works, right.
So to me, to answer his question, he doesn't have to wait any bit of time. And you want to be careful waiting because any growth while you're waiting will be taxable. So if he puts the money in, we do this all the time with people. So we have them put it in cash so there isn't any growth right away. And we generally will convert it later on because I have to file all the paperwork and send more paperwork, but I'll mm-hmm. convert it within a matter of weeks. Mm-hmm. But to me, it doesn't matter. He also asks, is there any income limitations? No, that's what makes this beautiful. That's why President Obama wants to close it. They originally wanted people who earned more than a certain amount of money to not benefit from Roth IRAs, and they realized inadvertently with the 2010 law change, this strategy has been helping those evil rich people
to make over $194,000
right, mm-hmm. into Roth IRAs. Yep. How long do I have to keep it in the traditional IRA, he wrote? I already answered that. In my opinion, you don't have to worry about it.
As fast as you can process the paperwork. That's
to me, it doesn't matter. Yep. But some people feel it does matter and you should wait. So again, I'm not going to answer that yes or no. I'm just saying in my opinion, oh so humble opinion, it doesn't matter. Is there any special precautions I have to make? In and of itself, no. Just make sure the paperwork is done right. There is a lot of moving parts here. You have to make sure that the paperwork is filed right, that the tax return is filed right. Keep copies of everything. Dot your T's and cross your I's. The other way around. Cross your T's and dot your I's and make sure you do all the paperwork correctly. But there is one huge caveat, and I reached out to this person and asked him, and you know what I asked him. Mm-hmm. And the first thing I asked him was, do either you or your spouse have existing IRAs? I don't care if you have existing Roth IRAs. I don't care if you have existing 401ks, 403bs, 457 plans, TSP plans. None of that matters to me. Do you have a SEP IRA, a simple IRA, or a traditional IRA? And he said, no.
Good for him because that allows the back door
yes,
to work.
because if he did, it wouldn't work. Now, Chris is the math guy, and I'm going to have him explain it. But what happens? Let's just pretend to use round numbers. Instead of him wanting to put $6,500 in each Roth, let's just say he wanted to put $5,000 in each Roth. They have a nice round number.
Yep.
And he had an IRA with $100,000 in it, 95. And his wife – 95, you want me to do that? Okay. So he had an IRA with $95,000 in it, and his wife had an IRA with $95,000 in it. Everything is working out perfect mm-hmm. here, people. Follow the math. So Chris will explain it, but let's just pretend he wrote back to me and said, yes, I do have an IRA with $95,000 in it, and my wife has an IRA with $95,000 in it. Well, here's the thing, people. The IRS, you might be sitting there thinking, no problem. Just don't put your $5,000 in that big IRA, put the $5,000 in a small non-deductible IRA all by itself, and then just convert that small $5,000 non-deductible IRA, and boom, you have the backdoor tax-free Roth conversion. It doesn't work that way, does it, Chris?
It doesn't. So what's going to happen is the IRS considers your traditional IRAs, no matter how many they're split up into, how many custodians you're dealing with, how many different financial institutions are holding your IRAs. It's one big IRA. So for them, they have – just take the husband for this example. He has $95,000 currently that could have in the past been deductible. Right, so it's purely a traditional IRA. They haven't paid taxes on it yet because they, you know, made less money earlier, so they qualified to take the deduction. Now they're in this situation where they're trying to do this backdoor Roth, and they put the $5,000 in, don't deduct it. Well, what the IRS assumes, or the way they treat it, is that you now have one big IRA with $100,000 in it. $95,000 of it has not been taxed yet, and $5,000 has been taxed. When you go to take money out, which is the next step when you want to convert, and you are trying to convert that $5,000, the money that comes out now comes out of there pro rata. You can't pick and choose which dollars are going to come out of there. So since 5% of the IRA is after tax and 95% is pre-tax, when you move the $5,000 over to the Roth, you're going to owe tax on 95% of the $5,000. Because as you take it out, they're assuming you're dipping your cup in this big giant IRA that has some mostly pre-tax dollars in it and a little bit of post-tax dollars in it. So 5% of the $5,000, that's $250. So $4,750 you're going to get taxed on. So that kind of defeats the purpose of what you're trying to do here. You're trying to get money that you've paid tax on into the Roth IRA. Well, you can't do it cleanly when you have an existing IRA. So that's why we ask that key question. The back door really only works properly if you have no existing traditional IRAs. Now, if you have one, don't give up hope quite yet, because there are some things that you can do to recreate the back door opportunity. And that would be one that we throw out there. Occasionally, people are in a position to move their IRA into a 401k. Some 401ks and employers allow you to do this. There are cases with self-employed. They can open up a solo 401k, and you essentially scrape that money out of the IRA, put it over in the 401k, and now magically you have no traditional IRA anymore. Now you can do the backdoor Roth contribution. You could also, instead of contributing the $5,000, use that $5,000 to pay the tax on converting some of that traditional IRA. So instead of making a contribution, use that $5,000 to move some larger amount, say $15,000, $20,000 even, from the traditional that has 95 in it over into the Roth. So there's a variety of ways you can get money into the Roth, even if you can't cleanly do the backdoor approach that we described. For this person, turns out they don't have the traditional IRA existing, so the back door works beautifully in that case. But if you have one, there are sometimes other options. How's that sound?
Excellent. Good. Okay, so need your paper back?
Yeah, you're stealing my stuff.
Well, I was writing some numbers down on it for an email question that came in.
Well, you're upside down.
Well, it's right side for me. It's upside down. There you go. Okay. Now it's right side for you and upside down for me.
Okay.
Depends which way you
next
turn
time bring
paper.
Your own paper. Seriously.
I don't have any paper. I got a good piece of scrap paper. Okay. Official KFKA scrap papers in the other room. Okay, so if anybody has any other questions, we're going to get to an email question that somebody just sent us before I answered the backdoor Roth question. But we do have another half hour left after a break. Do we have to take a break?
We've got about 6 to 8 minutes or so before we can take a break.
Plenty of time, plenty of time. We're going to need your handy-dandy – you don't have an HP12C. Do you have your real calculator?
Do I need a real financial calculator?
It would help for this next question.
Okay.
Isn't there an app?
Yeah, I think I have an app. Let me take a look here.
I think they have an HP12C app.
You can start.
They?
I think so, but it's fine.
I used to bring my financial calculator, but nobody.
I haven't needed it for so long.
Yeah, I know. Nobody ever gives us a calculation question until
now. Well, you can start setting it up. I'll acquire a.
Well, I won't set it up. I'll read it.
Okay, whatever.
It says, I'm curious. This is an email question that came in at 8:50 this morning. For those who want to email us, you absolutely can email us, jim@jimhelps.com. That's jim@jimhelps.com. And I spell it out because Chris laughs that I spelled out helps. But once somebody thought we said Jim Kelps, like kelp, the seafood there, the what is it, seaweed. They thought we said Jim Kelps. And the best one of all was the Southerner who spelled – remember when I said Jim Helps? you laughed about that? The guy from Louisiana?
Yeah.
That I was talking to, he wanted to spell back Jim Helps to me. And he went G-Y-M-H-E-A-L-P-S.
Right. Jim Helps. Yep.
But he spelled Jim wrong as well. Well, he spelled it right, but not – not the way I spelled Jim. Okay, so this gentleman wrote, I'm curious, is there a benefit to collecting Social Security of $2,400 a month at age 66 and investing that money until age 70, at which point I would withdraw 4% from the balance? That way, if I die early, I will have increased my net wealth for my heirs. And there's a lot of moving parts to this question. So we're going to look through some of these numbers. I don't like this strategy at all. Investment advisors love this strategy because you can start collecting Social Security early, they say, invest the money, and they're going to magically give you more than what Social Security can give you. And don't buy that for a minute. They're not going to be able to. A couple of moving things as Chris crunches some numbers here. Mm-hmm. This 4% withdrawal rate has been blown out of the water 9 times to Sunday as a quote-unquote safe withdrawal rate. It is not. The new quote-unquote safe withdrawal rate, according to Harvard, is 2.8%, and according to other studies, 3.2%. So I simply take 2.8 and 3.2 and average them to 3, not 4. So that is 25% less income can, quote-unquote, safely be removed. What do we mean by that? Can you remove it for a period of 30 years or more and have greater than a 90% chance of not outliving your money or running out of money? There's no guarantee that any withdrawal rate will last. There's a guarantee Social Security will last, but there is no guarantee that any withdrawal rate will last. And not only are you going to withdraw this 4% that he wrote, which is now 3%, you then have to increase it for COLA adjustments, just like Social Security is increased, no matter what that COLA adjustment is. It could be less than 1% or 0 as we got this year, or it could be up to 18% as it was in the late 70s, early 80s per year. So you can see massive potential increases to this withdrawal amount as well. But when we come back, we're going to just – we don't have our financial calculators with us. But I think we can do this with an old-fashioned calculator and come up with some reasons why I would want this gentleman to think twice about that strategy. However, I will also say if his life expectancy is short – and he wants to leave something to his family, by all means, do what he said. Collect early, right, because you cannot take Social Security with you. Right. However, if he thinks his life expectancy is typical, which for a male now is 85, and that only means half of all 65-year-olds is alive at 85, the other half has passed, so you could live longer than 85. But if your life expectancy is at least average, I'm real hesitant on this strategy.
Mm-hmm. Plus, we want to consider survivor benefits for
exactly. And that's what
spouse,
I was getting to for my heirs. It's one thing to leave a lump sum of money to your heirs. How about a huge Social Security benefit to your survivor?
Right. So we actually have a caller that have just called in. We're close to a break, though. So, Adrian, can they hold through the break or go ahead and take it? We're going to take it. So we're going to go right to Janice in Greeley. Good morning, Janice. Thanks for calling the show. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing fine. Thank you. And I want to thank you, Chris. You were going to call me back several months ago, but I went out on a job interview. But I did have to take early Social Security. And I'm 63. And I applied. Well, my cousin helped me to apply. I'm not good on the computer. Mm-hmm. He helped me to apply March 30th. And I was just wondering, I haven't heard anything from them by letter, or they said they would call. How long does it take once you apply before you hear from them? When he went on the website just this week, they said your case is yet to be determined.
Mm-hmm. They're quite busy right now with this deadline that's coming up the end of this month that affects a number of people.
They're being slammed.
They're slammed right now. So I've heard that they're quite behind. So
okay.
I wouldn't worry too much. This is one reason why they usually recommend that you go in and apply 3 to 4 months before you want your benefits to start, just to make sure there's plenty of time.
Oh,
now,
my
God,
well, I
good
didn't
news,
know. I didn't realize
sure.
I was going to have to do this.
Yeah, the good news is they will make it up to you. It's not like they're going to process it and then start it 3 or 4 months later. Your application has a date when it was applied for, and that's when your benefits will start, assuming they approve those benefits, which I would assume it's straightforward enough. You're not doubting that they're going to approve it, right?
I don't see why they would.
Yeah, I don't see why they'd. You know, if it's just a typical claiming what you've earned, what you have, it's calculated for you, it's just really a matter of time. And then what they'll do is they'll send you a lump sum amount for those months that they didn't pay you from the day you applied.
And do you have to pay taxes on that?
Maybe.
Maybe. That's going to be considered income for you, and your income from Social Security is going to be treated on your tax return. It'll depend on other income that you might have. If Social Security is your only income coming in, then no, there is no taxes.
I'm hoping to get the job next month or the month after that, so I'm going to stop it again once I get the job.
Mm-hmm. And how old are you?
I'm 63.
Okay. You won't be able to stop it until you turn 66. Because you can't suspend your benefits until your full retirement age. So
you could withdraw a benefit.
You could.
Or the earnings can take it all.
You could. If you know you're going to get a job that's going to have a hit because of the earnings test, is it a full-time job?
No, for right now it's only going to be 5 hours a day. Then they're hoping to up it a little bit.
Okay. You can earn up to $15,200, roughly.
$15,270 or something.
Something like right about that this year and have no effect on your Social Security benefits. But if you're wanting to, once you have the job, wait so that your Social Security benefit is larger in the future, then what you're going to want to do is withdraw your application.
Before I even start getting it?
Because once you start receiving it, instead you can't pause it until you reach your full retirement age.
Oh, I didn't know that. People kept telling me that, you know, once I got the job, I could stop, you know, like file and delay, like you always say. And mm-hmm. they said I could, you know, once I got the job, I could stop it. No.
It's Janice.
Oh, sorry. He was whispering me your name. I couldn't see the board. Janice, I'm counseling someone on this very situation just now. You have a very – actually, your ages are near identical. She's 62. You're 63.
Yes, I heard you. That's the one I called about when I was listening.
Oh.
I thought, this is just like me. That's the one I had called about. But I was going to have to go out on an interview, I thought, that day. So because Chris was going to call me during certain hours, and I thought, I don't want him to waste his time. I'm going out on an interview. Well, I didn't get it anyway. But and it was very similar. I thought, oh, so it wouldn't be bad to do that. But I thought...
Well, it wouldn't. If it could or it couldn't. And your case is a little different. The case of the person I was talking about, her salary was going to wipe out 100% of her Social Security. She did not want to claim early. She had to.
That's
okay,
the problem.
Right. So she has no choice. She needs the money to pay her mortgage. But her new job, when it comes, will wipe out all of her Social Security benefit because of the earnings test. People think that that money is lost. It's not. What they do on the earnings test, if you lose all your benefit, and to use round numbers, the person I'm talking about is 62. She lost her job. Mm-hmm. She's going to collect Social Security. Let's just say, to keep these round numbers, she collects Social Security for 1 year. She is now 63, and exactly 1 year later gets a job that is paying her so much money, the earnings test wipes out all her benefit. So she contacts Social Security, and she tells them, hey, stop sending me my benefit, because if not, you have to return it to them. Just stop sending me my benefit. I have this new job. The earnings test is going to wipe it out. And let's say that happens from 63 to 64 to 65. She's now 66, and Social Security withheld essentially 3 years of her benefit. At age 66, the earnings test goes away. That's her full retirement age. So Social Security will automatically say, okay, here's a woman who claimed at 62, collected for a year, but now she's 63, and for 3 years we withheld her benefit. We are going to now recalculate her benefit and give her those 3 years. They don't give it to you as a lump sum. What they'll simply do is say, we withheld 3 years, so we're going to pretend you retired not at 62, but at 65. And they're going to recalculate the benefits, which comes to about 6% more per year. It's not exact, but it's close enough for government work. So you're going to get about 6% more per year, or she'll get 18% more Social Security than 62. And they're going to start giving it to her automatically. But what she will then do, as Chris was alluding to, at 66, when they do this automatically, she's going to go to Social Security and say, suspend my benefit. Now she can suspend it because she's at her full retirement age, Janice.
Okay.
So now suspend my benefit. And they'll continue to grow this benefit, which is effectively her age 65 benefit. Remember, they gave her those 3 years.
Yeah.
And they'll grow that at 8% compounding per year. In your case, it's a little different, because if you don't lose it all, you're going to get some Social Security. What they will do is, let's just say you lose 5 months a year of Social Security, not all 12. Your earnings aren't high enough to wipe out all of your benefit. And that happens for 4 years because you're that happens for 3 more years because you're 63. So you only lose 15 months of benefits over that 3 year period, not all 3 years. When you reach 66, they will pretend you retired not at 63, but that you retired at 64 and 3 months. They're going to add those 15 months to your retirement age and give you probably about a 6.5, 6.8% increase in your Social Security benefit. But you will be penalized significantly because you didn't lose all of your benefit. It's good when they wipe out all of your benefit during the working years, because of the way they do the calculation. Am I missing something here, Chris?
Well, it just makes it cleaner. It's not really better or worse. It's just how much of it they're going to recalculate. It's nice and clean when it wipes out at all, because that, in effect, is the same as you suspended.
Suspending, exactly.
So that's the beauty of earning enough to completely wipe out your earnings. It allows you to effectively suspend before you're technically allowed to suspend. For you, most people working a part-time job aren't going to make enough to completely wipe out their benefit. But I would suggest we're coming up on a break here, but I would suggest you maybe give us a call this week and
okay.
set up a short appointment and where we can talk about specific numbers for
well,
you.
Well, I'm
where
in
you
Greeley, can, and I can't mm-hmm. get to Fort Collins.
No, we can do this over the phone.
Oh, okay,
we
great.
We can talk over the phone, but for us to give you some guidance for your specific situation, it really
yeah,
does
I'm
depend.
I'm really confused. So I yeah. cannot, once I get the job, I cannot suspend.
No.
Not until you get to 66.
Right. But what we want to analyze.
I think I made a mistake.
What we want to analyze.
Well, that's why Chris is saying you can withdraw your application. For the first 12 months after applying, you can withdraw your application.
So that's kind of like suspending it, isn't it?
Well, it's like
never
calling
doing
it off
it.
Like, and they treat it as if you had never filed. Any money they've paid you, you have to pay back, though.
Well, they haven't paid her anything
not yet.
Yet,
but if
not
if,
yet,
if
I
she,
don't know how long
if
they
she
take
waits.
4 or 5 months.
Yeah, see, that's what we need to discuss on the phone. This is complicated enough that we probably need to dig into your specifics and figure out what's the best path forward. Okay, so make sure you leave your contact information with Adrian here. We're going to go to a break, but leave your contact information, and then we can either reach out to you or you can reach out to us and let us know a good time, and we can chat on the phone this coming week.
Okay, I'll probably call your office and set up a good time.
That'd be perfect.
Okay, thanks, Chris.
Thanks a lot,
and thanks
Janice.
So much, Jim. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All righty.
So we are a little past time for a break here, but we'll squeeze in a quick almost bottom of the hour break.
And then we'll get to the email question.
Right. So we've got when we come back from this break, we're going to hear the number one song from 35 years ago in 1981. This is the song that started the popular Hall & Oates sustained run as one of America's top-selling acts running into the 1990s. So they
These have been the same songs for the past few weeks.
Yeah, I know. That's okay. We'll get over it sometime. So this is the Retirement and IRA Show. We'll be back after this short break. Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show here on 1310 KFKA. Thanks for joining us. That is the number one song from 35 years ago this week in 1981. Of course, Kiss on My List by Hall & Oates. We've heard that a number of weeks now.
List of lips.
It's list, and that's the little thing here. The title's often misinterpreted as Kiss on My Lips, but it's not. It's on my list. It's like on a list of things that...
Why don't you add that to the list of 10-year anniversary gifts? A kiss.
Well, that one's easy.
You could do that.
Vacuum and a kiss.
Vacuum and a kiss. No, you don't have to do a vacuum and a kiss. A vacuum or a kiss.
Oh, either or?
Either or.
Oh.
You're going to give her both? She's special.
Well, it is the 10th. Anyway.
We should have asked Janice when we had her on the phone. She's a woman.
Oh, true. True. Well, maybe when I talk to her this week, I can get her opinion on what we should do for my 10th anniversary. So, but anyway, we chatted with Janice about some Social Security claiming issues. We're going to get back into her details privately this coming week, because it looks like she's got a unique situation that we need to discuss with her.
It's uncanny how similar it is to the other person.
It is.
Very uncanny.
But this does happen. People in their 60s. Oftentimes lose a job or leave a job, and then the question is, should I go get another job, or should it be part-time, full-time? And then all layered on top of this is the decision of, should I take Social Security now or wait? And it can get kind of complex,
yes,
to say the least.
Should we give an update on what's new in helping my Social Security? I jump to this gentleman's
question. I can
give
a quick update.
You do have
that.
Time?
Okay. Yeah.
What's new, pussycat?
Well, this week on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com, I we chat. It's actually we are reviving a previous post on how taxation for Social Security works. I felt so we're the middle of April, a little past it now, but everybody's got taxes on their mind. So I thought it was a good idea to revisit exactly how Social Security is taxed. So that's what's new this week on HelpWithMySocialSecurity.com.
Interesting. What's new, what you can't. That was the briefest update you have ever given.
Well, thank you. We got things to do.
You are pithy.
My thanks.
Just like me.
Yeah.
I get right to the point.
Right.
So back you're to holding your... this paper all different angles.
We've got stuff written everywhere.
So here. Let me recap what this gentleman's email question was. We don't have our financial calculators, but Chris downloaded an app, so we're hoping the calculation in the app is quite accurate.
Oh, it is.
The theory behind the numbers is going to be there. So here is a listener who wrote, I'm curious, would there be a benefit to collecting Social Security of $2,400 a month at age 66? And investing the money until age 70, at which point I would withdraw 4% from my balance. That way, if I die early, I will have increased my net wealth for my heirs. Okay, first thing, yes, if you have a shortened life expectancy, by all means, this is a fine idea.
Mm-hmm. And it essentially leads to the one of the justifications for taking Social Security sooner than later.
Right.
If a lot of these suggestions of delaying obviously would break down if you have medical issues or for some reason to expect a shorter than normal life expectancy.
Now, one thing, if he already is 66, you have a few more days. You have till April 29th to file a claim. You don't have to have the claim turned on because it's going to take months to get that. Just file because you will be grandfathered in. If you can file and suspend right now, you will be able to get a lump sum payment.
You'd have to do it before you passed away, though, so it's not something you could pass away and then your heirs.
So what we mean by that, under the old rules, which are quickly going away for single people, and I knew this rule quite well because yours truly is single, and I was going to take advantage of this rule, you could file and suspend before, at age 66, and they will give you a lump sum payment for all the money they withheld right up till the day before your 70th birthday. At age 70, the lump sum payment goes away and you get the higher Social Security benefit for delaying. So if you were worried and you already are age 66, this is an option. You could go to Social Security, file and suspend. Just get there and do it before April 29th. It doesn't have to be activated. You just have to have the paperwork signed by April 29th. And then you, anytime, like Chris said, you can't drop dead all of a sudden. You can't just have a heart attack and boom, you're gone. But what has to happen is if you were diagnosed with a condition and you knew you were going to pass away early, just before your 70th birthday, you waltz into Social Security and you say, hey, give me a lump sum for all that money you withheld, and you could get it. But outside of that, let's pretend that's not an option, Chris. Let's pretend that this listener is right now 65 and he won't be 66 for a few more months, and he's contemplating this as an option. If he knows longevity is not in his family, if his whole family has passed away in their 60s and 70s, or he has a health issue, and he knows he is not going to live, and he's looking to maximize a benefit to leave to his non-spouse, perhaps, or his family, this could be a good idea. However, if he has average longevity, which for a male nowadays is 85 and a female is 87, unique to these numbers, which were just released in January, the new longevity numbers, the gap between men and women is narrowing. They're not killing us as soon as they used to.
Interesting. Well, maybe we're killing them off faster.
No, it's because of vacuums.
Because of vacuums?
Yes. Women are working less with better vacuums.
Oh.
So I'm telling you.
So...
improve your woman's life expectancy. Get her that vacuum for her 10th anniversary. She'll love it.
Okay. I'll add that to the logic of the vacuum at the 10th anniversary.
I'm telling you. Okay. I know women. They love vacuums. Go for it.
Okay.
Buy it.
Well, right now it's the only thing on my list.
Yeah, tractor and a vacuum, but you already bought the tractor.
Yep, exactly.
Okay. So let's just assume, Chris, for the sake of argument, that this gentleman has good life expectancy. Mm-hmm. His thoughts are... I will delay taking $2,400 for 48 months excuse me, I won't delay it. I will take $2,400 a month for 48 months and invest it off to the side. And, of course, investments only go up. They never go down. So he's going to invest, and I'm being facetious to the compliance people who are listening to this, that you're going to invest this, and it's only going to go up. It's not going to drop in that four-year period. And it's going to grow to such a level, you will be able to withdraw 4% a year from it forever and not run out of money, and you feel somehow that may give you more money than Social Security and leave something for your benefit. Beneficiaries to inherit. So let's look at some of these numbers. If he turns on Social Security now and collects $2,400 for 48 months, he will collect a total of $115,200. Now, if that money did not grow at all, and he took that $115,200 and withdrew 4% from it, it would generate $4,600. But as I told you already, the 4% rule has been blown out of the water, and it is not a guarantee that you would be able to withdraw $4,600 from that for the rest of your life and never run out of money. But on the simple value, that's the number you're looking at. On the other hand, if you delayed Social Security and began letting that $2,400 earn delayed retirement credits, you would end up with $768 a month more in 4 years of Social Security. $2,400 a month, you would get 32% more Social Security, or $768 more per month, which over a 12-month period is $9,216 more Social Security. So at face value, if you claimed early and you didn't get any growth over the next 4 years, you would be able to generate $4,600 with no guarantee it would last forever. Or you could delay and get $9,216 more per year, with a guarantee it will last for as long as you live and go up for cost of living increases. Okay, that said, he wants to invest the money over 4 years. And here's where I, yes, was being facetious, but I have a problem with it. If somebody came into my office and said, Jim, I want to buy a house in 4 years. Where should I put the money? I'm not going to tell you to invest it. You're going to put that money in the bank. You need it in 4 years. So I'm a little hesitant for you to invest it. But Chris went ahead and determined how much would you need to earn per year investing $2,400 a month for 48 months to be left with enough money to generate what Social Security is going to give you guaranteed, $9,216.
You'd have to earn over 32% per year rate of return.
For the next 4 years.
For the next 4 years in order to end up with an equivalent amount if you're using the 4% rule. If you're using the 3% rule, which is more the going standard these days, your rate of return requirement goes up over 44% per year. Now, if you can figure out how to reliably earn 30 or 40% per year,
I have a job for
over
you
the next 4 years.
And I have
need
a job
to talk
for you. Yes.
Because
safely.
Now, to play devil's advocate, Jim, the trade-off here is if he's amassing his own money, there is this nest egg piece.
Correct.
So if he suddenly drops dead at 72,
he has a nest
egg to hand to his heir. So
that's why we said if longevity is not there, do it.
But it's probably a far bigger trade-off than he realizes here. It isn't close. You are giving up a huge effective rate of return in order to have this little nest egg off to the side. I would suggest that there's other options that might accomplish what he wants to do without doing it this way. So whoever this is, George or whoever, whatever we're going to call him.
George.
I would say dig into it a little bit more or contact us.
Yeah, it's not something I would recommend. And I'm also assuming here, because some would argue, well, he's going to have to consume money. Well, I'm saying no. If he can afford to take Social Security and just invest it off to the side, he doesn't need the Social Security. So we're just assuming he doesn't need the Social Security right now. If he is concerned about a shortened life expectancy, his strategy makes perfect sense. But if he has longevity It, to me, would make more sense to take 9,000 – what would it come to? 9,000 what?
216.
To take 9,216 more per year guaranteed that will also have COLA adjustments, live off of the 4,000 –
600.
4,600 that his 4% rule would generate, take the difference and invest that off to the side and leave that as your inheritance.
Right. So there's other options is the point.
Yeah. Okay. We prefer Social Security. Yeah.
So we're down to our last minute here. So we need to do our pie drawing. We have three entrants. We have two callers and the emailer here. So I've randomly assigned numbers to those three. Jim, pick a number between 1 and 3.
One.
One is Ding Dong Daddy from Dumas from 2 weeks ago.
Ding Dong Daddy from Dumas.
Now, his real name we have, of course.
Is the appropriate. Ding Dong, if you're listening.
Well, I think we have it.
I think I've lost the paper.
Uh-oh. Okay, well, we'll try to track down Ding Dong Daddy from Dumas.
Ding Dong may need to reach out to us. I'll let you know by next week if I have his paper.
That sounds good. So this has been another episode of the Retirement and IRA Show. Next week, we'll be back with you, but it'll be a pre-recorded show. Not sure the topic yet, but we'll try to find something fascinating for you. So thanks a lot for joining us. We know it was a really nice day out there, at least in northern Colorado. We're going to go out and have some fun doing yard work. So see you next week on the Retirement and IRA Show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
Missed any of today's show? Listen again on iTunes or the Retirement and IRA Show.com.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.